This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In October of 1962, the world trembled on the brink of nuclear war. It waited for 13 tense days for a resolution to the Cuban Missile Crisis. An American U-2 spy plane had secretly photographed and confirmed Soviet nuclear installations in Cuba. On October 16th, President John F. Kennedy called a secret meeting of military advisors in the Oval Office.
There's a medium-range ballistic missile launch site.
You're listening to a recording of that meeting.
On the southern edge in west central Cuba,
who would that be?
CIA experts Arthur Lundahl and Sidney Graybeal are speaking to the president.
How far advanced is this?
Sir, we've never seen this kind of an installation before.
Even in the Soviet Union?
No, sir. From May of 69, we've never had any.
They'd never seen this kind of installation before. On October 18th, President Kennedy privately recorded this dictation.
Why? I was most anxious that we not have to announce a state of war existing, because it would obviously be bad to have the word go out that we were having a war, rather than it was a limited blockade for a limited purpose.
The Americans decided to blockade Cuba. No one knew how the Soviets would respond. On October 23rd, Kennedy makes a phone call to Assistant Secretary of Defense Roswell Gilpatrick.
In order to stop them, I thought that we were going to have to fire on them. I was wondering whether the instructions on how that's to be done, or where they're to be shot at and so on, to cause the minimum of damage. And in addition, if they're boarded, it's very possible the Russians will fire at them as they board, and we'd have to fire back and have quite a slaughter.
October 28th.
Yes, sir.
President Truman, please.
Thank you.
Kennedy calls the only man ever to have ordered the use of an atomic weapon, President Harry Truman.
He'll be with you in just 1 minute, Mr. President.
All right.
Hello?
Hello, this is Harry Truman.
Hello, how are you, Mr. President?
Well, I'm all right, and I'm just pleased to death the way these things came out.
Well, we'll just stay at it, and I just wanted to bring you up to date on it. We got a letter from him on Friday night, which was rather conciliatory on these withdrawals. Then on Saturday morning... 12 hours after the other letters received, we got this entirely different letter about the missile bases in Turkey.
That's the way they do things. You're on the right track, and you just keep after them. That's the language they understand, just what you give.
All right, good.
They've been asking me for comments, and I said the President of the United States and no man can comment on it.
All right. Okay, good. Take care. I'll be in touch with you.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I certainly appreciate your call.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President.
The recordings are remarkable. Listening to them puts you right inside the Oval Office, witnessing a political high-wire act to avert catastrophe. More remarkable still, the recordings were secret. Now, hours of this historic audio are available along with the new book, Listening In, The Secret White House Recordings of John F. Kennedy. Joining us to talk about it is Tom Putnam, director of the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So, why don't we talk about the sheer fact of the existence of these tapes first off? Why did Kennedy install the equipment in the Oval Office?
Well, we don't really know. He began it in the summer of 1962, and many people felt it was in reaction to the Bay of Pigs, but the Bay of Pigs actually happened in 61, so there was a long lead time. But there was a sense, A, he was interested in history, that he was perhaps preparing material for his own memoir, but also after the Bay of Pigs, different people, his advisors said, well, I had said this, and I gave this advice, and there was a sense that he wanted an accurate accounting so that he could hold people accountable to the advice they had given to him.
But they were secret tapes.
Yes, no one knew about them. Really, the only people who knew about them were the Secret Service agent who installed them and his secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, who occasionally was the person who pressed the button to start the tapes. And there's some question that even Attorney General Robert Kennedy didn't know the tapes until after his brother's death.
Even his own brother.
Right.
Wow. So how did this work? I mean, I don't imagine that this was the era of remote controls at all. So.
Right. So there was a button on his desk, and they made it look like the type of button that you might press to call your secretary. So that's why people didn't assume that it was anything beyond that. And then there were microphones hidden. There were some in the Oval Office. There were some in the cabinet room. He actually did have some installed in his private residence, but he never used those.
Oh, fascinating. I mean, the tapes offer huge insight into the workings of the Kennedy presidency, and there are hours and hours and hours of recordings. What were some of the revelations that most surprised you?
What you see is a president totally in control. And so through these tapes, you see him in the center of action. He famously never had a chief of staff. He didn't want a kind of a level between him and what was going on. So he is right in the middle of each of these debates, asking good questions and ultimately making those decisions.
So this tells us a lot about his style. Absolutely. In the Oval Office that the rest of us were never privy to.
Yes. And, you know, it's down to the details during the Cuban Missile Crisis when they're actually going to stop some of the Soviet ships. He asks, you know, we need to be sure, are there press on these ships? We want to be sure that they're not taking photos. I mean, he's really thinking ahead about every little detail involved with the decisions he's making.
Well, regarding the Cuban Missile Crisis, there is a bit of tape of a phone call between President Kennedy and former President Dwight Eisenhower, because a lot of what I found quite surprising in the collection here is that President Kennedy did maintain relationships with some of his predecessors. So let's listen to this phone call between Kennedy and Eisenhower right at the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
General, what about if the Soviet Union Khrushchev announces tomorrow, which I think he will, that if we attack Cuba, that it's going to be nuclear war? And what's your judgment as to the chances they'll fire these things off if we invade Cuba?
I don't believe that they
will. Yeah, they will. In other words, you would take that risk if the situation seems dire.
As a matter of fact, what can you do? If this thing is such a serious thing here on our flank, that we're going to be uneasy, and we know what thing's happening now. All right, you got to use something. Right. Something may make these people shoot them off. I just don't believe this will.
Yeah. No, hang on tight.
Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot, General.
All right. All right.
Tom Putnam, to think back at how the world was feeling at this moment, I mean, we felt like we were on the brink of nuclear war. And here we have two very powerful men talking to each other, both frankly and yet collegially. I mean, what do you make of it?
And that bit of dark humor when they're literally talking about perhaps a nuclear exchange and, you know, hold on tight. You know, that relationship is especially interesting one. Eisenhower, obviously, you know, this five-star general during World War II, whereas JFK was just, a lieutenant captaining a PT boat. Eisenhower was one of the oldest men elected president, JFK one of the youngest. But over time, as President Kennedy was in his term of office, there was a level of respect. I think he earned Eisenhower's respect, partly because of phone calls like this one. But it's interesting, Eisenhower's advice is in keeping with the advice that JFK got from most of his military advisors, which is go ahead and invade. You know, that won't force them to shoot these things off. And really, I think President Kennedy had the longer view. I think he loved history. He understood that he owed it to history to do everything he could to avoid any incidents that could lead to a nuclear exchange. And as we know, that's the way he resolved the crisis.
Interesting, because President Kennedy wasn't just a historian or a strategist. He was also a president and therefore a politician. So yes. He was very sensitive to how things looked, and not right. only to the American people, but to folks that he had to deal with on Capitol Hill, for example.
Yeah.
And we've got some tape here of a moment where Kennedy opens the paper one day in 1963, I believe, and is pretty upset by what he reads, that military aides have built a hospital bedroom for a then-pregnant Jackie on Cape Cod at an airbase just in case she went into labor. So let's listen to that.
Spend $5,000 for that. Let's cut their budget another $100
million. Precisely, Mr. President. The last word that they had for me yesterday after my talk to Pierre was, keep the photographers out of there and fight them out of there.
Okay.
They went ahead on their own. The funny part about this is that it's a sidelight, which might lighten your day, is that the Army, you know, whom we saved from this sort of thing out Walter Reed, when they saw this yesterday, they're unhappy, if you please.
Well, that's why the goddamn service, they ought to cut them $1 billion.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, when you think of what the waste goes on.
It is, absolute nonsense.
Imagine what they do if you didn't just stay on their ass. They were going to order me three planes instead of one.
Precisely.
They're going to do all these. Well, I mean, that's the way these guys spend money. I mean,
absolutely.
They're shocked if we don't. Now, the only thing is, it would seem to me, I'd like to send that furniture back. Have they paid for it?
I'll find out.
Just on my own. I don't care. We own a store, but I'd just like to send that goddamn furniture back. It's probably worth about $1,500, $2,000.
When I asked him yesterday, where did the $5,000 go?
Yeah.
And the things they told me, I said, well, you couldn't have possibly spent $5,000 on that.
A lot of the stuff we can just ship right back today.
Right. I'll get ready.
I'd love to send it right back to Jordan Marsh in an Air Force truck this afternoon with that captain on it. Now, what about transferring his ass out of here in about a month?
He doesn't have any sense.
I had the Carl.
For incompetence, not for screwing us.
Exactly. Well,
and that silly fellow who had his picture taken next to the bed, I'd have him go up to Alaska, too. The PA will be talking to you about that.
Right.
Okay.
This is not a warm and fuzzy John Kennedy.
No,
I mean,
no.
He wants to ship people out to Alaska. What's going on here?
Well, it's amazing the amount of money. I mean, it's $5,000. Then it was, you know, sizable amount. But today, you know, in the amount of federal spending, it's such a drop in the bucket. But as you said, he was concerned about public relations. Why would people be spending this money, you know, on what was essentially something for his wife? There's an interesting story that the gentleman who he calls the silly bastard, who had his picture taken next to the bed, is still alive. And he never did get shipped up to Alaska. As a matter of fact, it was until he heard this tape, he never knew that the president had seen his photo and was that upset about it.
These tapes are so amazing. You feel like you're right there.
Yeah, well, that's what we hope. I mean, it really allows you to relive the Kennedy presidency. We're, you know, issuing the book during the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy presidency, and we want people to really be able to feel like they were in the Oval Office and experience it the way President Kennedy did.
We've got one recording here that was taken at a dinner party. Can you tell us a little bit about what we're about to hear?
Sure, and obviously this one wasn't secretly recorded. So it was 3 days after he had announced for the presidency. He's having dinner with his friend Ben Bradley and Ben Bradley's wife, Toni. Jacqueline Kennedy's there. And James Cannon, who was a reporter who worked for Ben Bradley and was writing a book about American politics and why people get involved in politics, asked, could I tape a conversation about why you're running for president? Why do you want to be president? So JFK agreed with the tape. Mr. Cannon donated it to the library. So during this dinner conversation, he's asked by Ben Bradley, you know, why does he love politics? Why does he want to be involved in the political struggle?
All right, so let's hear it.
It's stimulating because, you know, you're dealing with it. Life is a struggle, and I mean, you're struggling in a tremendous sort of arena, and it's like playing Yale every Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not comparing the presidency with that, but I'm just saying that how could it be more fascinating than to run for president under the obstacles which and the hurdles which are before me?
Tom Putnam, in this day and age where media is totally ubiquitous, I mean, we don't know what goes on secretly in the Oval Office, but it's almost hard to imagine that a president would want so much of his private moments actually captured for history. I mean, what does it tell you that, or do you imagine such a thing being able to happen now?
Well, after Watergate, I think every president learned that you can get burned as much by tapes like these as they can shed a positive light on you. I'm obviously somewhat biased and the director of the Kennedy Library, but many historians say their respect for John F. Kennedy grows the more they listen to these tapes. When you hear him, you see the decisions that he's making. He had a lot of resolve, but he also had a degree of caution, especially during things like the Cuban Missile Crisis and advancing civil rights. But I think it also shows the level of confidence that he had in himself and the decisions that he was making.
Do you feel as if, in a certain way, these tapes serve as a memoir that Kennedy himself never did get a chance to write?
In many ways, we believe that the reason why he taped them was so that he could later write a memoir, and obviously he was never given that opportunity. So this is our ability to at least listen in to the decisions he was making and those raw material that he would have used were he to have written such a memoir.
Well, the new book is Listening In, The Secret White House Recordings of John F. Kennedy. And Tom Putnam is the director of the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum. Great to have you back on Radio Boston. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
When we vote this November, let's all remember, let's vote for Kennedy. Make him your selection.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com.
Our show is produced by Jessica Alpert, Amory Sievertson, and Dina Rosendorf. We're receiving production help this week from Aisha Siddiqui.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Look at Kennedy's history. You'll see it's no mystery why he suits us to a T. He's your kind of man, so do all that you can and vote for Kennedy.